am Georgette Pierre, and you are watching Black and Nuanced Podcast, a visual extension of my podcast of the same name, where we seek to dispel the idea that all Black people are monolithic. And I have a fan fave, Carl Seaton, who is a director. And yeah, if you're into TV film, you've probably been following him or catching all his interviews, because apparently he was on this award tour doing all these interviews and shit with like 5 to 6 different outlets. But I respect it, Carl. What's up? You know how I do, Carl.
Yeah. I do. Boy, do I ever. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. So I'm ready. I'm prepared. I'm like, you see the shirt I got on? I'm ready. I'm ready, coach. Right. It ain't even punching me. She was just done.
Well, let me give them background on why you come ready with this Muhammad Ali. So Carl came onto my podcast last July. You were in between going to set. I know you were working. And so I forgot where you were going, but you were definitely on set doing some pre-production. And do you remember what show it was? I don't remember. It was like last July.
It was in 2018, actually. I was driving to go edit on The Chi.
Okay, right. Wait. Yes, you were editing. You were editing, but it was 2019 because I was looking at the edits, like my podcast.
Wait.
Carl, because I started the podcast in October 2018. That's the reason why I know it was last summer.
Well, what did I do with you the summer? No, it wasn't 2019.
It was. Let me tell you why it was. Only because I'm refreshing my website and I had to pull your episode over. And you were episode 34 and I'm at 47 right now.
Wait, what did we speak on? We did another thing. Was it an After Dark thing when I was on the phone? It was you and another gentleman on the phone.
Oh, yeah, that was a podcast. Yes, yes, yes. You told me no to After Dark. So I was like, all right. But that was a regular podcast. You told me. He was like, Georgette, we ain't doing that.
Here's what we're not going
to
do.
Here's what we're not going to do. You're not going to get into my motherfucking business. My personal business.
Here's what we're not going to do. Right. Okay, my answer.
No, you're fine. But no, so you were on the episode 34, season 2, called Lights, Camera, Action, and Nudes. And so if they want to hear a robust interview, they can actually go back and listen to that. And so, but I hit you with a couple of great questions, I thought, in the second segment. My line sister, she calls your name out every time. She loves some Carl on that episode. Like, that is her favorite episode.
Oh, cool. Props to the line sister.
She loves that episode. But you and I met, it's been 6 years, Carl. I met you back in 2014. To one of your frat brothers. We went to school together. He and I went to school together. But I was flying back and forth to LA and New York for VH1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real quick story. There was a group of us actually this past Friday. We just ran 10 miles for Ahmaud Arbery.
Oh, nice. Oh.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, it was actually a full circle moment because he started running with me back in the day. And I hadn't run like that. I hadn't run a 10-mile run in like 5 years. So definitely got my ass kicked. So it was tough, but it was good to be out there with him. It was definitely for the right reason. It's 5 Black men running down the street middle of the day was kind of cool. So,
Right. Yeah. Because apparently Black people are a threat in this damn country, but whatever. But yes. On a lighter note.
It's on a lighter note, yes. Because we could definitely sidebar into that and just stay on that. So, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, right. And so on a lighter note, Carl, you are this... you are a director. You are a TV director in every form of this title. And, we had talked in full about how you got there, the journey to getting to TV directing. But, like, fast forward now, we're in Rona, quarantine, all that jazz. You know, what has it been like for you and just fellow Black creatives in Black Hollywood for being, like, going through Rona?
I'll say right now, everybody's in the same place right now. Yeah. It really doesn't matter what level of career you are, where you are in terms of trajectory or status or anything like that. Everything is on pause. And it's an indefinite pause because, especially in production, like writing is continuing. People are writing. I'm writing and things of that nature. But production is at an all-time global standstill because it's almost impossible to practice social distancing on a set. You know what I'm saying? When you got a cast, you have a crew, you have extras. And so because of that, it's creating an upheaval in how we're used to doing things. So you have all these different guilds. You have the Directors Guild, the Producers Guild, the Writers Guild, the Screen Actors Guild, as well as the Academy, all trying to figure out ways that will allow us to get back to production in a safe manner, because no one wants to be the first one out and someone gets sick. And then God forbid someone dies, because if that happens, production is done indefinite.
Yep.
So everybody's like, wait, let's make sure we do this correctly. So everybody's taking precautionary measures and then just kind of throwing things on the wall to see how we can formulate the best, most effective game plan. I talk to, you know, showrunners and directors and other directors all the time. Everybody's just kind of, we're getting information here and there, and we get ideas that aren't fully fleshed out. And we're getting, you know, strategies and agendas people are trying to push. But at the end of the day, right now, because this pandemic is so fresh and we're so ignorant to a lot of aspects of it, people are still trying to figure out how best to, you know, attack it, how to straighten this curve out, and then how best we can move forward that will allow us to tell compelling stories. I will say this, the group who's it can work to their advantage are like very indie filmmakers, you know, which is where I come from, where you had no crew, you had no budget, you know, you were just kind of going guerrilla tactics. That you can still flourish with that right now, you know what I'm saying? And I think if you have a skill set like that, that can serve as an advantage, because you're used to not having a lot of materials and resources, but still realizing that I have certain elements that are required to tell this story, but I don't need this and this and this. I just need this to tell this story. So, but like I said, it's still up in the air. Every day it gets, we're hoping everything gets closer back to some degree of normalcy, or at least production friendly, because everybody wants to get back to work. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny because we work long hours. It's grueling. It's very tiring. It's very energy draining. But when you take a pause, like we've just taken a 2-month pause, and you realize, man, I really love it. Because if you're just in it for the money, it could burn you out real fast. You got to have a whole lot more behind it, as opposed to just getting a check. Because you're just in it for a check, and there's so many different elements that can just wear you out and push you out. So you know, this has been a reminder of the passion, the desire, the feelings of elation when you create something that moves somebody. And then also, that's another thing, during this pandemic, so many people are watching content. You know, people hit me up because they're catching up on shows I worked on and they're seeing my name, which is really cool. So it's a great reminder of how important this content is what content is as well.
Okay, with the humble flex, seeing my name in the credits and shit. Okay, I see you.
You gotta stay humble because you know it's hard to earn. It can all go away in a second. You know what I'm saying? So you gotta be great. You gotta express gratitude at every turn, and you just can't take anything for granted. You know what I'm saying? So
absolutely,
it's not flex at all. Just grateful. I'm grateful that you know my work is being made and being seen and being enjoyed. So yeah,
absolutely. You said you were coming from an indie background, and I in some of the interviews that you were doing, you had dropped Kareem, but Kareem is actually not new, right? And so it was kind of interesting. So, you know, it's 8 years old. One, what made you drop it, right? Like release it. And what was the thought process on even creating Kareem, which is a silent film?
Okay, so I dropped it. Yeah, I shot it literally 10 years ago. Thanks, 10 years. Shot it, I'll answer all your questions in one continuous manner. It was done out of a personal challenge to myself to see if I still have an ability to tell a story, and it was a challenge. It was a challenge because I hadn't shot anything in years, and because of some of my previous work had really, it was a horrible experience. So I was just like, I didn't even know if I really wanted to keep pursuing this. So I've been pretty much, you know, in a holding pattern in a place of stagnation for about 3 years. So that was a project that I created myself, that I, you know, pushed myself to see, can I still do this? And if I can still do this, do I still want to do this? You know what I'm saying? So that was a personal challenge, which is why I said, let me take away dialogue. Let me make sure it's just a non-audio film to make sure I can tell a story that the audience can follow without any dialogue. So, it was, you know, I made a bunch of challenges to myself. I had $200 for the budget. You know what I'm saying? And I said, I'm going to shoot this film for $200. And that's why it was screened last week, because my buddy has, he screens short films. And he targets, you know, indie and low-budget filmmakers. And I'm like, well, this is a perfect film to show, because this is independent filmmaking at its finest. You know what I'm saying? Where you beg, borrow, steal, go over, under, and around obstacles. Done. So, you know, and it's a... Like I said, it's a skill set I have accrued through the years, because most of the films I'd worked on all were lower budgets. And you learn to work with the resources and the materials that you have and say, okay, we got this lemon and this lemon. We got a little sugar. Let's make this lemonade. You know, so you just kind of keep going with that. And that film is a great testament to that, to show when you have more time than money, how to maximize your time, how to prepare properly, how to bring the right people around your project to make sure you're constantly gaining momentum to get it done. So that's why I showed that and discussed it and everything like that. And also went back and discussed before the making of the film what led to the film, which was that film kind of brought me out of a deep depression. You know what I'm saying? People, especially people of color, we don't even realize we're depressed half the time. So because we self-medicate with, you know, liquor and weed and sex and whatever. And we don't, rarely do we speak on mental illness and things of that nature and things that are just shutting us down. So that's why I mentioned it, because I'm like, you know, I was depressed for 3 years. And the first year, I didn't even realize what it was. I just had no motivation to do what I normally had loved to do. So it was, that also was a catalyst in the making of that film. Like, okay, if I'm going to get out of this, this is going to be like that final, that was like the final chapter of getting out of the depression. Before that was tapping into the joy and reminding myself why I did what I did and just getting excited about things again. And that final stage was actually doing.
It takes some time to get there too. Cause sometimes you have all these ideas, like you meaning generally speaking. And I was just telling somebody when quarantine happened, I couldn't do anything for 3 weeks, Carl. Like I was tired. I felt exhausted. Like I just didn't want to do anything. And then after that 3 week period hit, then it was just go, go, go. But I think a lot of times we don't give ourselves like the opportunity to sit still. And I feel like Rona has forced everyone to do that. And so I thought it was just very interesting and relating to some of the things that you said. But you also have mentioned, I mean, offline, which I thought was interesting. Like there's something else that came out of the film when you released it, that, you know, a little gem.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So that's another thing. So when I did the film, I really had no agenda with it, no expectations. I just did it. Because initially I put it on YouTube and a filmmaker who I didn't even know hit me on YouTube like, yo, did you do this film? I said, yeah. He said, man, take this on YouTube right now. And I'm like, why? He's like, because film festivals won't play films that are on YouTube and this film deserves to be in film festivals. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Thanks, bro. So I took it off of YouTube, started putting in a couple film festivals, won a couple of awards for it. And in one festival in particular, I won an audience award and a company approached me to distribute it. Now, I hadn't done a short film in years, so the landscape had changed. You know, YouTube hadn't existed. Internet didn't really exist the last time I've done a short film. So it was a whole different landscape. And this company was like, you know, you have a visual film we can take all over the world. And I was like, oh, wow, okay, let's do it. So for the last, you know, it's still playing. This deal is still intact. So I'm still getting paid for it. I was able to pay everybody that worked on the film and, you know, especially, it's nothing better than giving somebody a check they didn't see coming. You know, because everybody in the film, everybody worked on it, were friends of mine. My cousin was my DP, and everybody that I casted was in my phone, literally. Like, you know, I'm doing a short. I got a perfect part for you. There was no audition process. These were all actors I had seen before in various things. So I knew they all had strong capabilities and strong talent. So I said, you know what? I got a project I'm working on. Let me know if you're interested. Everybody was 100% down. Everybody was down, you know what I'm saying? So, and that goes back to surrounding yourself with people that are passionate, that aren't in it for how much am I getting paid, and go talk to my agent. They're like, yo, if it's dope, let's do it. And they were like, I'd be like, so where's the dialogue? Where's the script? I'm like, that's the script. I gave them the script. And they were like, I'm reading it. Like, where the words? Like, there are no words, man. It's all visual. So you got to flex your visual muscles. It's all in here and in your body. And everybody rose to the challenge. Everybody rose to the challenge. So, yeah. You know, that's also, like I said, this was like a divine experience because everything kind of aligned itself perfectly. You know what I'm saying? The shoot went on without any problems. I mean, we shot it over the weekend during Thanksgiving weekend on a Saturday and Sunday, 2 8-hour days. and started cutting it. We were done by that Wednesday cutting it. So in 5 days, we had a film. And then my neighbor in my building composes music, who I ran into just by happenstance. He said, well, I'll compose music for you. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. It's just everything just kind of aligned itself. So it was definitely also meant to be type of stuff.
Yeah. I was also telling somebody, so because I'm a free agent now, you know, due to all the COVID-19 shuffle, like I don't work where I used to work anymore. And I was talking to somebody because now I'm really going to start leaning into my consulting business. And I was telling somebody, I was just like, to be honest, like you don't necessarily need a crew anymore. You don't need these bells and whistles that we're so used to. I said, the fact that I'm even getting interviews done, or I'm seeing a lot of these big platforms using Zoom, they're chopping the shit up, putting some graphics behind it. And the shit just still looks as clean as if they were in a studio. And I was just like, there's no excuse at this point, Carl, to do anything.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, technology has allowed us. Because, you know, back in the day, and this is before digital was even considered legitimate.
Yeah.
You know, you had to use film and Super 16 and 16 and 35 millimeter. And then you had to get it transferred. You had post-production. Everything costs. And today you can shoot something on your phone, edit it on your phone, and then post it all from your phone. You know what I'm saying? And it's just you. So technology has allowed us to create content a lot easier. That's a pro. The con is it's a lot of bad stuff out there. You know, just because you can do it, just because you have the tool doesn't mean you make great things with it. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of people don't really approach it as a craftsman. They just throwing stuff on the wall to see what's going to stick.
Right.
So you have to kind of wade through a whole lot of stuff sometimes, admire through the mud to get to the diamonds.
Right now with everything going on, are you in pre-production for anything? Are at least any of these networks, are they doing pre-production for things, hoping like at least they'll be ready to go when the world opens back up?
No. I was prepping on an episode of Chicago PD when everything got shut down. I prepped my episode. I was supposed to start on a Friday. They said, you know what? We're going to take this Friday off so we figure out what's going on with this pandemic. We'll start on Monday. Cool. Then that night, it's like, you know, we're going to take 2 weeks off. And then 4 hours later, like, yo, the season's over. So it really went from a day to 2 weeks to season's done. Go home.
Shit. So you were in Chicago and everything, and then you had to come back to L.A.
And they were like, you know, trying to get your flight. We're going to get you on a flight to make sure you get out of here. Because like I said, at that time, this is like right around March 13th, which was a Friday the 13th. Nobody knew what was going on, how long it was going to last, the severity of it. The death started piling up. It started spreading in all these different cities and everything like that. And everybody was, the fear just started creating a tidal wave, which is understandable, especially when you're like people of a certain age, children, and you might be fine, but you could bring it back home and get your whole family sick and people didn't really know how to, you know, address and so forth. So that uncertainty that no one had ever dealt with before, we've always been able to say, okay, that's over there in this section that can be contained, but something like this to run rampant globally, no one had ever experienced that before, you know. So, yeah, the plug was pulled, season was ended. So right now, because I was supposed to shoot that, then do an episode of Snowfall, and then some other shows after that. So everything's been put on pause indefinitely. Everything.
So these networks are not even entertaining the idea of like having like something ready to go. They would just rather know when things look up.
Just from an insurance standpoint, they can't afford. I mean, everybody may be
ready. That makes sense.
You know what I'm saying? But it's such a huge machine with each network and each show is its own individual machine that requires scheduling, not just the scripts, but scheduling, making sure you got the cast together, making sure you have the crew together, make sure everything is lined up and so forth. So, you know, it's just not that you can't just snap your fingers and say, okay, we shoot tomorrow, because it requires so much to get that train moving again. So yeah, right as it stands right now, I've read about some productions going back overseas and in Europe, in a couple countries, but nothing here right now. No.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to what is this new normal going to look like, at least in our industry, once things get back up and going again? Do you think everything's going to kind of fall in line the way it used to? Because there's certain things, like I get that we can use technology, Carl, but then there's certain things where you still have to do things traditionally. Like you're going to still shoot films and the way you shoot films, you're still going to shoot TV the way you shoot TV. Do you see any of that? Like, what does that look like?
You know, that's a $1 million question. Mm-hmm. And that's a question a lot of folks can't really answer because it's such brand new foreign territory to say what it looks like. I can't call it. I know in the media, see, like, for example, last Monday, TV show, Simone Missick show. I'm forgetting the name of Justice. A CBS show. They shot an entire episode using, you know, Zoom and things of that nature. It was a great anomaly type episode, but for the most part, I don't think audiences are going to want to watch shows like this on a recurring basis. And I mean, it's tough to say, you know what I'm saying? Less smaller groups, no background, no extras, no crowds, fewer locations. So the storytelling is going to have to become more smaller, I guess more intimate, more intensified. But some shows are just not like that. So it's a tough call. It's a tough, yeah. It's really hard to say right now where it's going to go. You can speculate all day because,
right,
you know, some director buddies and I, we speculate. But I'm like, at the end of the day, guys, we just throwing stuff on the wall because, you know, and then, like I said, the audience has gotten smarter and their hunger for content has elevated as well. So to strip that back and go back to how it was back in the day in the 70s when you're doing, you know, McCloud, where you had two or three setups and two people in the scene and so forth, that may work in the immediacy for now for a couple of things, but long term, the storytelling has elevated so much. It's like, we got iPhones now. That's like going back to, you know, razors and saying, this is the new phone right now. You know what I'm saying? Or not even that, but instead of razors, like, we're going back to pagers. And people are like, but we've had the iPhone. Now we want to go back to, you know, or dial-up or something like that. Like, you go from wireless back to dial-up or modem. It's like, that'll be an adjustment. So, you know, like I said, and everybody's factoring all of these things in to make the best moves forward because, like I said, the industry does not want to shut down. It doesn't want to stop. It wants to be back at work, but they want to be back at work as effectively as possible.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, before we get into this last segment, on a lighter note, what are some of your interests outside of film? Like, I know, you know, you always talk about this, that, and the third, best practices on, you know, but because I would see you on red carpets, I was just like, okay, Carl, I see.
To answer your question, Georgia, I got a lot of read. I love to watch. I love TV.
Yeah.
I love film. I love TV shows. So, I mean, I'm a fan of what I do. And there's nothing better than watching a show that I'm a fan of. So I'm catching up on shows I've watched in a while and things of that nature, reading a lot, resting a lot, and then, you know, just enjoying family time. You know what I'm saying? I got a little one. So, you know, I'm watching her, you know, get bigger and all that good stuff. So, you know, just this pause, I mean, rarely have any of us had a chance to just do a pause, you know what I'm saying? Unless it's self-inflicted, like your health, unemployment, something like that. But when it's a global pause where everybody has to pause, where like there's no traffic, there's been no traffic in LA for like 2 months. It's like, yo, this is different. I mean, you know, like you can drive anywhere in 10, 15 minutes because there's literally no traffic. Nobody's out. Everybody is, you know, quarantining and staying at home and, you know, trying to straighten this curve out. So, you know, you just maximize the time. You kind of tap back into the things that excite you and things that interest you. You know what I'm saying? Right. It's funny because, like you said, with the first 3 weeks for you, the first week, I was like, okay, this is cool. I'm sleeping. I'm eating. I'm binge watching Narcos Mexico. I'm like, this is awesome. You know what I'm saying? And then watching the news. You know, you keep your eye on the news. And that got to be problematic because the news sleeps into your subconscious and you find yourself up at 4 a.m. stressing like, yo, what's triggering this? Let me go back to what's triggering this. Oh, it's this news. Mm-hmm. Because the news is hitting with everything left and right, throwing everything at you. And you want to be informed, but it got to a point where they were just kind of, it got to a point where it wasn't even information. It was just paranoia and fear as the thematic thread of all this information. So yep. I was like, let me just be on some need to know basis.
Yep.
I don't need to know all this information, all this data, you know what I'm saying? And seeing how, you know, how inefficient our leadership was handling it or mishandling it. So, you know, I wasn't surprised at any of that. So I'm like, this isn't really feeding my soul right now.
Yep.
And I need, let me focus on positive things and being optimistic and not just that, but just you know, using this as mental healing as well.
Yep. So, okay. But they can go on your Instagram and see some of them suits you be busting out on set and shit. Like, don't be acting like you ain't got a little fashion sense though, Carl. That's what I was trying to get at. I was just like,
Listen, Milton Trail is a stylist in Chicago. His shop is Shop Agriculture. This brother, I met him back in 2018. And I said, listen, man, I wear suits on Friday on set. And I saw him on Instagram and reached out to him. Told him what I was doing. He says, I see what you're doing. I get it. So the first suit, we talked about color patterns and styles, all this kind of stuff. After that, I was like, I said, listen, man, I need a suit. Whatever you give me, I'm taking. And I trust this brother's fashion. He has a passion for fashion and styling. Like I have a passion for filmmaking. So I'm like, y'all need a suit. So, and I trust him emphatically. He has never given me anything. I'm like, I don't know about this one. Never, ever. Where I'm like, man, I don't know. I mean, like I said, he is such an organic and genuine skill set he has that I trust him emphatically. And I refer everybody to him. Like, you all need to holler at this dude. You got an event coming? Go holler at this guy. You know what I'm saying? And it's not just people in Chicago, but it's everybody. Reach out to this guy. You want to go see him. You want to be in his shop and stand with him and watch his process and see how excited he gets at building this look. And his looks have themes and stories. And it's amazing watching his brother put things together. I'm like, I just marvel at it. I'm like, and I'm a hanger. I put it on. I wear these tailored suits and I've been eating and I've been working. So I ain't been working out. I was like, yo, man, we're going to have to let him out. He's like, no, bro, you got to get on that treadmill. We're going for a certain look. I'm like, he telling me I got to work. I said, wow, I've never heard this before. Okay. All right.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yeah, but it looks good on you. And I love that, that you're elevating that, you know, for us, because clearly they always expect something different from us, but nonetheless.
Yeah. Well, that was a personal thing for me. I made a vow to myself. I said, when I get to a point where I'm working consistently, I'm going to wear suits on Fridays.
Yep.
That was just a personal pledge. And when I did, I said, okay, I was getting suits here and there. I'm like, I'm putting them together. Like, I'm all right. I said, I don't want all right. I want to be like, and so I said, let me find someone who does this for a living. And that's when I found Milton. And you talk about a partnership made in heaven. It's been amazing.
That's, I mean, he's
legitimate, does what he says, trust him emphatically. He's a solid guy. I mean, so any award show I'm doing or any type of event like that, that's my guy right there forever. No one will ever, that's my guy, because he's shown and proved so many times, and he has a genuine passion for what he does. And I got to respect that immensely. So, and like I said, I don't take any credit, but whenever I'm rock, you know it's dope when a stylist on a show is like, okay, I see you, and give you, when a stylist who does this for a living is like, okay, yeah, thumbs up, like, all right, I'm on the right path here. So, you know, and like I said, it brings an element to the set, because, you know, on set, everybody in jeans and as in comfortable clothes as possible. You walk in and say, like, wow, I didn't get the memo. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes some of the crew joins me. Like on PD, there are a couple guys on the crew. We all rock suits on Fridays now. It's a whole little thing now. The goal is to get everybody. It'll never happen.
But the goal is it won't ever happen.
It'll never.
I guess you can never say never.
You never know. Never know.
You said what?
It brings a level of fun to set. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It makes enjoyable day. Everybody looks forward to it. Like, okay, Friday's coming. Get by, Friday's coming.
Let me see them damn shoes Carl got on. Let me, what's up?
Yeah, so I got to constantly keep building. It's just another element of the experience. You know what I'm saying? So it's cool.
I love it. So going into this last segment, all of the things, you know, I called out your, what you got on the background. What music? Well, first tell them what's on what I'm looking at as far as on your wall.
Oh, this is a blanket of old cassette tapes from back when, before Georgette was born.
See, come on. He's trying to be funny. Please do not listen to him, because I recognize some of them shits. But what, you know, with the whole Versus series taking place on Instagram by Swiss and Timbo, what era of music do you romanticize the most?
Oh, 90s hip hop. Hands down.
Yeah.
Hands down. Yeah. 90s hip hop. I mean, actually going back, I'd say 88 to like 98, 99, that era, you can just put on and let's just go.
Yeah.
Let's go. Wu-Tang, Nas, Tribe Called Quest. Let's just go. Make Air, Pun. We can just go. Snoop. Yeah. It's a whole bad. It's so funny because, and I talk about this with my buddies, we all got this going. We were so spoiled, you know, because cassette albums are coming out every Tuesday. You have classic albums. You could get a Wu-Tang, a Mobb Deep, all within a month, and Redman, you know, Matt, and you just took it for granted the album was going to be dope. You know, you didn't get trash music because everybody was trying to bring their very, very best. And there was a standard. And you just said, well, this is what hip-hop is. And I don't want to say I'm stuck in that era, but I just really enjoyed that. It was just another reason why I'm enjoying this Last Dance doc, because he's playing music from that era. Like the 90s hip hop, it was the soundtrack of the Bulls dynasty. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I'd say 90s hip hop.
I'm with you. So I've been taking refuge at my mom's house in Northern Virginia because until New York feels safe. But I'm listening to Queen Latifah's Black Rain. Like I Lost Boys, and even rest in peace to Andre Harrell, and hearing about all the artists that he found and discovered and connected.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uptown,
yeah.
All day.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's a great way to tap back into things that brought you joy. You know what I'm saying? So
yep.
I checked out a couple of the versus battles. I saw the debacle of the Babyface and Teddy Riley. People were so mad at Teddy. I'm like, yo, he's trying to give you all a show. He's trying to perform y'all. It didn't work out the way it wanted, but that just shows you that this happens to the pros. And I mean, people clowning are like, y'all clowning a legend. Y'all clowning one of the greatest who ever do this. Y'all clowning like he a goober. I'm like, hold on now, time out.
And it was like he a goober.
Like, come on, man. Like, this dude, he created a whole era, a style of music. New Jack Swing, that was all him. So, you know, it's unfortunate that it didn't pan out that day in particular, but it's been really cool seeing these artists. And then you also, in watching them battle, you see their passion for what they do. And not just their passion, but their love for not just their music, but who they're going against his music. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like they aren't familiar. Like, oh, what is this song? They all know each other's work. You know what I'm saying? I do wish that they had their own platforms, so they could benefit from it more so than, say, Instagram or Facebook or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So I think that will be the next frontier, because I think people are really starting to get into ownership.
Yep.
This is cool to do it on this, but we can go bigger. You know what I'm saying? Like Puffy's Revolt. You know what I'm saying? Like something where, you know, it's yours as opposed to somebody else's. And technology is allowing us to create these avenues where it is all yours, where you own this and you can replay it wherever you want and monetize it and get and build your bandwidth from that.
I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen because obviously they did the rematch Teddy and Babyface, but the gag and the jokes about Teddy were he wanted to do it on his own platform and people were joking like we would have paid XYZ for the shit to not work. But to your point, he was thinking like that ahead of time. And I think
That makes total sense that he was thinking like that. Cause it's unfortunate it didn't work, but that makes total sense that someone like him would be thinking like that because that's what people of his ilk think like. You know what I'm saying? Like, how can I create my own platform and build my own thing? Because the followers are gonna come. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
You got a million people tuning in to breaking a social media platform because there's so many people tuned in. I'm like, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Absolutely. So, and lastly, as you were joking earlier, so what this Rona body going to look like? When you come out, Carl, you got Rona rolls, you're going to be slim and trim. What's up? What are you doing for physical activities?
Oh, I'm definitely working out. I mean, you know, eating cleaner. You know what I'm saying? I'm not eating fast food or anything like that. I mean, this is the best eating I've done in years. And you know, workouts are here. It's different workouts because I'm not in the gym. I'm doing, you know, more plyometric stuff, sprints, bike rides, things like that. So, I mean, workouts are there. And it's cool because taking a break from eating, you know, badly, because when you're working and on the road, you're just eating what you can.
Yeah.
The fast foods, a lot of grease and things
like
that.
Which you have access to, yeah. Quick access,
yeah. So, I'm eating clean, eating healthy, drinking a lot. I'm drinking lots and lots and lots of water. So, I'm detoxing, you know what I'm saying? Okay. So, I'm not saying I'm going to have no six-pack, but I'll be all right.
I know my habits got bad. Like, I'm up until 6 a.m. I'm eating cake and drinking wine. Like, I'm eating more than I've ever eaten because my mom is cooking, and so I'm not spending money on food. And so, but it was an adjustment. So I don't know what I'm rolling out with, but it ain't going to be no rolls. But, you know, I got to work on that. So, Carl, I'm used to walking everywhere in New York. Here, I don't go anywhere.
That's, yeah, see, New York can get you with that because you can walk 6-7 miles in a day, and it's what it is because it's just a walk. You know what I'm saying? So, you got to get out there and go running. You got to go for a jog.
Yeah, I need to go walking more. So I'm going to definitely do that. I'm definitely going to do that. Carl, thank you so much. How can they find you and all your fabulousness?
Mr. Carl Seaton on all social media platforms.
Okay. Don't be coming with no... Carl's not with the shits. He ain't say it, but he ain't with the shits, y'all.
Carl's not with the shits. And DMs will still be trash. My DMs are trash.
Still Carl.
They creatively trash now. I'm like, how did you even concoct this trash you coming at me with? Yeah, I'm like, what are you? Come on, man! It's trash on multiple levels.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh. Well, yes. Well, Carl, I appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, GP. Whenever GP hits you up, you just say, "Hey, whatever she wants." Because
I don't take our access for granted, too. You know, we joke a lot, but I definitely don't take our access for granted because I know mofos want to be up in your ear, like, "Yo, Carl, can you, Carl?" And I'll be like, "Boop, boop, Carl, what's up? Where you at? Oh, okay."
I will say you've always been consistent, GP, and I respect your consistency. Consistently loud intonations.